when I came back, some very important work had been going on elsewhere in the world. It turns out that a pathologist at the western end of India, sitting on the Indian Ocean, and there's a hospital called by the name of Warren, a very good pathologist, had some special stains, and in biopsies taken from the Tulsa patients, he noticed some bacteria. They were gram-negatives. He called a resident there, Barry Marshall, to help. He discovered that this was the cause of ulcer. Yeah, so they discovered that these organisms were the cause of peptic ulcer. And they developed a treatment, which was developed with antibiotics and acid suppressants and bismuth, and that really solved the ulcer problem. And then the incidence of ulcers began to decrease. So that in gastroenterology, peptic ulcer, which had been a problem while Dr. Palmer was head of the GI section, now had disappeared, mm-hmm. and the big problem was inflammatory bowel diseases, which consisted of two diseases, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, and they became my major, major research and clinical interest, even to this very day. And that's the subject that I've written extensively on. And of course, back at the university, I continued with various academic activities and gradually moved up the scale and was appointed professor in 1951. And then a few years later, a man by the name of Louis Block had given the university a lot of money, and they established professorships in his name, so I was the Louis Block Distinguished Service Professor of Medicine. But I still took care of patients. They were the number one issue in my life. Well, I really, to this day, think that is our main goal. But I also did research. I did all kinds of experiments trying to reproduce inflammatory bowel disease. I even did some proctoscopic examinations on a couple of monkeys to try to reproduce the disease in them, but it didn't work. But on the other hand, I was able to produce a form of colitis with immunological studies using a principle that I borrowed from a scientist at the Rockefeller Foundation called the Auer phenomenon, and I actually produced a colitis that was used, duplicated by people in London and in other places. And we continued to study this problem. But a very important development was that I learned that we have what is called the microbial health factor. That is, our small intestine is blanketed by millions of what we call healthy bacteria. Mm-hmm. And if the balance is maintained, the bowel stays healthy. But if, for example, if good bacteria are lost by taking an antibiotic or getting an enteric infection, and the balance is upset, then the immune defenses are weakened and they are liable to get inflammatory bowel disease. And that today is the big area for research in inflammatory bowel disease, to study the intestinal microflora. And it turns out that there are millions of good bacteria as well as millions of bad bacteria. And that work is going on here at our place at the University of Chicago, but there's a fellow by the name of Balfour Sartor, at the University of North Carolina who has done a lot of primary work in that area. And so that is an active area along with genetics. And we had a young girl who worked in our department. She studied genetics, and she was one of the first to find a gene for Crohn's disease. And since then, it turned out there are all kinds of genes for Crohn's disease, and it's become a very, very important part of the picture. So we think of inflammatory bowel disease as a combination of genetic, immune, microbial factors all mixed up together that help to produce the disease. And it's important to know about this because Crohn's disease currently is increasing all over the world. And I've been very curious as to why it's happening all over the world. And I saw an article in the Tribune that the livestock people feed their cattle antibiotics.
Right.
And antibiotics can, one of the things that can upset that microbial balance. So I'm wondering, I posed this as a research question to our group. I said, please look into this and see if that is causing a disruption of the balance and contributing to the rise in Crohn's disease. So that's currently under investigation.
Well, I have a question I wanted to ask you with regards to the microbial aspect of inflammatory bowel disease. I have a listener who sends me emails, very learned listener. He has an interest in Crohn's disease. And one of the questions was, what is your opinion about Mycobacterium avium paratuberculosis, or MAP?
Oh, that has been extensively reviewed and studied. It's gone back and forth, back and forth. I think the evidence today is that it may contribute, but it is not the cause.
Right. So.
And a lot of work has gone on. There was a microbiologist at the University of Connecticut who did a lot of work in that area. And there's no question that microbial factors are involved, and we haven't yet finished with that task. And it could well be that other organisms may be found eventually, because there's some work going on in France where families, whole families, will develop inflammatory bowel disease under conditions that look like a bacterial infection.
Now, I'd like to ask you...
So I would say to your listener, that organism has been very well studied, but it has not gotten the blue ribbon. But on the other hand, bacteria are very, very important.
Now, I'd like to ask you, with regards to, I mean, there's so much history to discuss, and I wanted to get your historical account of the milestones in gastroenterology that struck you as significant advances that really pushed the science forward, that allowed you to do the research that you wanted to do. What have you seen over time that has really made...
I think what has happened in gastroenterology...
Yes.
...has been the adoption of basic sciences. And in the beginning, there were no controls, a lot of opinions, and as immunology and microbiology and other basic sciences were adopted, and then we got to learn more about the nature of the problem, but we still haven't solved it yet. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to get the ultimate cause. We know a lot of precipitating factors. I have seen families, for example. I did see one family had four girls in the family. All four of them had Crohn's disease. And I'm sure there must have been some bacteria involved in that situation. I would say it's the adoption of basic science, controlled studies, scientifically trained investigators who are utilizing all of the basic sciences, and we shouldn't forget, of course, the tools. The radiologists have made marvelous developments in terms of imaging techniques, and then the endoscope, the invention of the endoscope has been tremendous. And as a matter of fact, endoscopy was brought to the United States at the University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. 1934, Rudolf Schindler came with his gastroscope, and it was only the stomach. But after he got started, new instruments came along, and now British scientists developed optical glass fibers, and fiber optic endoscopes now are the big thing in endoscopy, and they allow safe and complete examination of the interior of the GI tract from beginning to end. And that allows taking biopsies, making actually doing microscopic studies even at the time of endoscopy. And I think it's the introduction of the basic sciences into the field that really have opened up the area, and it's become a very exciting field. As a matter of fact, I expect we'll have more discoveries in the years ahead.
Now, you also mentioned the importance of focusing on the patient.
Absolutely. You cannot ever forget the patient. Everything that we do, the research that we do eventually has a bearing on the patient. It changes the treatment, or we understand the disease, we can help the patient. And there's no question that that is absolutely key. And that certainly has been my guideline in this field.
What have been your observations with regards to changes in the doctor-patient relationship over the years? Have things improved?
My impression, of course, I'm a little bit at a university, you get a little bit isolated in a sense. You're not out in the outside world so much. But I have an overall impression that the physicians are very concerned about their own lives as well, and they do not make themselves as available, mm-hmm. access as we used to do in the old days. And I think the physicians today are very good and they're very well trained, but access has been a problem.
I wanted also, you mentioned with regards to research, what areas do you find promising, and what direction is the science moving?
The science is moving really in the direction of genetics. I think that field has been opened up by these early studies, and now there's an interesting research that suggests that genetics changes the anatomy changes the anatomy of the intestine to infection or to inflammation. And so genetics and biology are two key sciences that have to be involved. And of course, we have a very strong relationship with patients, and they become, I often like to say, look, we as physicians, we are committed to providing excellence in the care of illness to the patient, and those who can afford it should support research in the field, sort of a partnership of sorts. And I founded in 1962 an organization known as the Gastrointestinal Research Foundation with just a few people, and over the years it has collected millions of dollars for research and has supported our program extensively. And I think that is happening in other areas of the country as well.
Now, as a teacher, what methods do you use or have you used to convey your ideas to students and patients?
We have students with us all the time. In fact, I should tell you that the University of Chicago has just changed its educational curriculum. We're starting earlier. We're adding more science. We are adding much more science to the program, and we're starting at least a month earlier. And the students, for example, the freshman class, scientists come before the freshman class, and each scientist describes his or her research, and students can choose which laboratory they want to go and work. We actually invite and encourage students to come to our laboratory, and every May we have a one-day symposium on research that these students have done in those laboratories. So it is involvement personally, directly, with the actual scientist that makes a big difference.
And my final question for you is, what are your plans for the next decade?
Well, I thank you for the encouragement. But we have founded a sort of an interior organization known as the Kirzner Institute for Inflammatory Bowel Disease. And it's being run by Dr. David Rubin and Dr. Russell Cohen. And they've asked for my my assistance, and I said I'm going to help them try to get this established so that we can further increase research in those areas and further take care of patients.
Well, Dr. Kirzner, it's been an honor and an absolute pleasure to have spoken with you today, and I wish you nothing but the best for your 100th birthday coming up on Monday.
Well, thank you so much. You were a very good interviewer.
You know what? You carried the ball on this one.
No, I think it was. I've enjoyed this very much.
Well, all the best to you.
Okay.